Good morning again. Glad to see that some of you decided that the weather wasn't bad enough to keep you away from church this morning. This morning we're going to turn our hearts and our minds to Exodus chapter 14 as we continue to work through the Bible, through the Gospel Project. Somebody asked me what I was going to do if it snowed so much that we couldn't have church this morning, and I said, I don't know yet. I hadn't figured out whether I was going to preach the same sermon next week or just skip this week, but hey, I didn't have to do it because it didn't snow that much. I kept praying for this much snow, and I didn't quite get that far, so. yes, Exodus chapter 14. There are a lot of reasons, a lot of things that we use songs for. We use songs to tell about our love for one another, and some people use them to express deep heartache, and other people use them to express revenge on those that they thought they loved, but something happened. There are those that we use simply to entertain us. I've read that some of the old Negro spirituals, some of those old slave songs, were used to give directions for the Underground Railroad. The songs have been used to protest and to support various actions of governments and even the church at times. Songs in the church, we use them to worship our God and Creator. We use them to teach theology, and we use them to encourage our faith. There's another use for songs I want you to consider this morning, and that is to teach about the past. In our society, we may not so much use songs to teach us about the past, but in a society that relies upon the oral tradition, upon the word of mouth to pass on the stories of one generation to the next, a great way to do that is through the use of song and then the repetition of those songs. Let me illustrate how this works. One song that I thought of that we use to teach is this. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know, how many of you learned to sing the alphabet? And that's how you learned the alphabet. Yeah, several of you. How many of you are willing to admit that that's how you learned, and some days you still have to sing so you remember what order they come in? Yeah, I don't drink and drive, and it's a good thing, because if I got stopped by the police officers, I never learned how to sing the alphabet backwards. I can't remember it forwards half the time, so I'd be in trouble. You know, that's we use that to teach. Another way that we do, another song that I used to learn to memorize things was when I was younger, I learned a song for the books of the New Testament. Later, when I was in college, a couple of my friends started singing me one that went through the whole Bible. I'd never heard that one, but the New Testament, I learned my New Testament books in part through that song. And then later I just learned that if I said them really fast, nobody knew if I got them right. But I could remember them better if I said them very quickly. But songs, they help us to memorize. They help us to learn the things that are important in our history. The events of the Exodus from Egypt were so important to the whole nation of Israel and who it was, who she was to become, that immediately after getting past the reaches of the Egyptian army, as they got past the borders of Egypt, Moses penned a song. And he was told, and he taught it to the people of Israel so that they would remember through their generations the things that God had done. Now this morning we're not actually going to look at that particular song. song. That song is in Exodus chapter 15. And it's important, and I point to the song because of the importance of the events, because this is one of only two places I could think of in the Bible where you go from the event and the story of the event, and then you get the song. And the other one is Barak and his victory for Israel later in the period of the Judges, where it tells about his victory, and then you have a song almost right away. Well, here the events are so important that this song is taught to the people of Israel so that they could teach it, the ones who came out of Egypt could teach it to their children, and their children could teach it to their children, and so that it could be learned for the generations. You know, just like God gave them the Passover meal to help them once a year to be reminded of what He did for them, this song was to serve as a regular reminder to the people of what God had done. And so I want us to look back to Exodus chapter 14 and see what it is that God did and why it was so important to the nation of Israel. And in doing so, to see what it means for you and to me that God was there. You see, I've been around people who faced some difficult times and been asked through those difficult seasons to accept God. And they look at it and they look at the difficult seasons and they say that's a reason that they cannot believe in God. There's others who look at the atrocities in the world and they ask how there could be a living, loving God. And the thing about this passage is that it teaches us several things about God. It teaches us about the Exodus and about those times. It seems like we're about to face, like our faces are turned towards the Red Sea and our backs are to the Egyptians. You see, God helps us through those times. The message of the song in chapter 15 is that God is in control, and that He will get the glory from what He does. So let's turn our hearts to Exodus chapter 14 this morning. Beginning with the 13th verse, this is what Moses would record. It says, Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." And then down to verse 25. It says, "He jammed the wheels of the chariots so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, 'Let us get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and the chariots and horsemen.' Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The waters flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant." See, I want us to consider this morning the fact that God is in control and that He will get the glory from what He does. You see, Israel was standing there in between, well, we would say between a rock and a hard place, but for them it was between the wet water of the Red Sea and the fluid movements of the Egyptian army. And the Egyptian army was, at the time, the best-trained military in the world. They had the best equipment. They had the best training. They were to be feared by all. And here, if you look back a little bit in 14, you find that Pharaoh didn't just send out the ground troops. He didn't just send out the ones that would usually be the front of the military fight that were expendable. Rather, it says that Pharaoh sent out the best of his army. He chose the best chariots and the best drivers and the best leaders of his army, and he sent them to chase after this band of slaves. Now, they were arrayed as an army. You read the scriptures, it says that they went out by their divisions like an army, but how many armies take along their wives and their children and their livestock and all of their household goods? You see, an army like that couldn't move very fast. And besides matters, they were not trained in warfare. They were trained to make bricks and to herd sheep. And maybe they were, some of them were trained in construction, but what good does that do you when you're facing the world's greatest army? And so they're in between the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army, and they're encamped there. And God says, I'm going to do some things through you and for you, and the whole world will know that I am God, and I am to be feared. And so God parts the Red Sea. Now, I've seen some big winds that have done some interesting things to water. But you know what I have never seen is walls of water where the water separated into, well, a path through the middle of the water. And people try to explain this away in several different ways. There are some who claim that this just happened to be, there was a kind of a ford through some marshy area that Israel walked across. Hey, that's great. Now explain to me how the Egyptian army drowned in a marsh. I don't get that either. God did something miraculous on this day. And Moses says that God parted the waters and He dried up the ground in the midst of these walls of water. And that's two miracles, if you ask me. One, the parting of the Red Sea, and two, the drying up of the ground in the midst of these two walls of water. Because have you ever gone into a lake? What's the bottom of a lake like? Well, mud. And sometimes it's a sand. But the sand is always wet and squishy, and it doesn't dry, even when the water recedes, like with the tides at the ocean at night, the sand is never dry immediately. It takes a period of time before it dries out. And the more water it's had on it, and the longer the water has been there, the longer it takes for the sand or the mud or whatever is on the bottom to dry. But yet, Moses says that in a matter of minutes, God parted the Red Sea and the land was dry so the people of Israel could walk across it. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to walk through the midst of these great waters, I'm going to be fearful. I don't mind the water. I really don't. In fact, I kind of enjoy the water, but if there is a wall of water on either side of me and there's nothing visible holding it up where it belongs, and the word wall here isn't like the wall of a house, it's the same concept, like a city wall, the fortifying walls of a city that are, would be much taller than the walls of your house. You know, you think about a building that's 2, 3, 4 stories high, and that's a wall of water that you're looking up to as you walk through the middle of it. They're fearful. There had to be some fear in the hearts of the people as they walked through that water. But here's the thing. God was saying, I'm going to do something for you and through you. And so they were able to walk through this ground, or walk through this water on dry ground. I thought about what David wrote in Psalm 23. When he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Here are the people of Israel, and I think that the only way they could walk through this water is by trusting God. Because I think everything within them would have said, no way! But God takes them through the sea on dry ground. But what's even better is that it says that God is the rear guard behind them. There's this pillar of cloud that God is using to guide and will use for the next 40 years to guide the people of Israel. And generally it is going before them and showing them the directions they must go and to the places where they're supposed to camp. It will stop, and when it lifts up, they know it's time to move. But at this particular time, it says that while it had been in front of them, as the Egyptians came, it moved around behind them. And it provided a darkness. It provided a darkness so that there was the opportunity for the people of Israel to go through the sea on dry ground while the Egyptians couldn't see to follow them. You see, God is working this miracle for the people of Israel. He's in the process of bringing them out of Egypt, and He's going to do one final mighty act. And once again, He's separating His people, the people that He has chosen and the people that belong to Him by faith, the people of Israel, and the mixed multitude that joined them as they left Egypt, and the Egyptian army that is following them. And sometimes in life, we get to that point where we're looking at the Red Sea square in the face, and we're looking at the Egyptian army behind us, and we're looking and saying, God, what are you going to do? God, what are you going to do? How are you going to get us through this? And while God may not always part the water for us so that we can go through on dry ground, and while God may not always destroy the Egyptian army, one of the things that we can see through this passage of Scripture is that God is always in control. Because God says, not only am I going to take you through on dry ground, but I'm going to harden the heart of Pharaoh one last time. And so God, it's very interesting, God had led the people of Israel through the eastern edges of Egypt almost like they were lost. And the thing is by going the route they did, by taking the method and the time that they did, what it looked like to Pharaoh was these people are lost, and guess what? You can go round them back up. And if you do it right, Pharaoh, you can even convince them that what you're doing is for their own good, because they're just lost out there in the desert. They need some help, these poor lost sheep of Israel. And so the Egyptian army, they followed the Israelites. The Israelites probably had several days advance lead, but with the chariots and the training of the Egyptian army and the lack of wives and children and sheep and goats and cows and whatever else they were carrying with them from their households. The Egyptian army was moving much faster. And so when they come to the sea, God puts this wall of cloud between them for a period of time so that Israel can pass through on dry ground. And the thing is as God sees the people of Israel have crossed over to the other side of the Red Sea, He moves the cloud. The cloud lifts. And I don't know what kind of cloud this was, but I was thinking about this, and I was reminded of when I was first learning to drive a truck several years ago. My trainer and I were supposed to be coming down from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan into Michigan. And to do that, you have to come across Mackinac Bay, come across the Mackinac Bridge. Well, the thing is the fog sets in there frequently, and so they have warnings, and they'll tell you like 20 miles, the last stop before you get to the bridge, the bridge is closed. And so you wait, and you wait. And then the fog begins to lift, and it becomes safe to drive across the bridge again, and they open it up. And I didn't get to see a lot the first time I went across it because, well, quite frankly, it was still pretty foggy. I went across it one other time, and oh man, it's beautiful to look out and to see the things on either side of that great bridge. And here's the thing. When God moved the cloud, the Egyptian army could see this path that the Israelites had used to cross through the Red Sea. And God was just giving them the opportunity to make a decision. And He had done enough before that God knew what that decision would be. Moses says that God had hardened the heart of Pharaoh. And like we said last week, it isn't necessarily that God just reached out and said, "Pharaoh, your heart is hard," but rather He was doing things in such a way that Pharaoh's heart was going to be hard. And once again, God had moved in such a way that He could use Pharaoh and his hard heart. So He removed the cloud, and the Egyptian army starts to follow Israel through the Red Sea. Now, as I read this, as I was looking at this, the only thing I can come to, the only conclusion that I could come to, was that partway through, God suddenly made the ground wet again. Because it says that the chariot wheels began to get clogged up. The Israelites had walked through there, and you know what happened if you take a whole bunch of people and walk through mud? Eventually, it kind of starts to dry out, and even if it was mud, it would get hard packed. But it says it was dry ground. And so the people of Israel wouldn't have really done anything to this ground. And these chariots were designed to go on dry ground and flat, smooth ground. But evidently God, in His miraculous workings to show Himself to the people of Israel, to show Himself to the people of Egypt, and to show Himself to the nations around, did another miracle and suddenly made this dry ground wet again so that it was getting into the wheels of the chariots and they could not continue. And so the Egyptians said, "Quick, let's turn around. God is fighting for the Israelites." You know, they've seen the 10 miracles or 10 mighty signs that God had done. It says that there was nobody, no household in all of Egypt that didn't lose somebody. And I think that at this moment, the Egyptian army said, "We're next. Let's get out of here." And God said to Moses, "Raise up your staff over the sea one more time, and the waters will come back. The waters will come back." And so God removed the east wind that had been blowing, and God removed the east wind, and when He did, the walls of water returned to its place. Now, this isn't just any returning. This is walls of water that are tens of feet high. And have you watched the videos that they do on the national news channels when there's hurricanes down in the south, and they show the storm surge of 10 or of 5 or 6, 7 feet that come in and the damage that storm surge can do? Do you remember the videos of the tsunami that hit Japan a few years ago and how much destruction it did when this wall of water around 10 feet high surged into the island? And it's moving houses, and it's moving cars, and it's moving everything in its way. And now you've got a 30 or a 40 foot wall of water coming from your right hand side, and a wall of water 30 or 40 feet high coming in from your left hand side. And so you've got two tsunamis that are coming together, and they crash over the Egyptian army. And it says that these choice charioteers are all destroyed in the water. Because God is going to do something for the people of Israel. You see, God is going to show Himself powerful so that in the next 3, 4, 5 months as they're finishing their trip to the Promised Land, they're supposed to remember how powerful God is and what God can do so that they will trust Him. God is showing the people of Egypt how powerful He is so that they will leave Israel alone and will not chase after him or her any more because of the fear of Yahweh. And God is doing this so that the rest of the nations around can see what God is doing, so that when the people get to the border of the Promised Land and those that are already living there hear about the Israelites being there, their hearts will melt and they will fear the power of Yahweh, the power of the Creator God of the universe who is working for and fighting for the people of Israel. You see, God is doing this so that the people of Israel will be prepared for the Promised Land. But also it says that so that He will get the glory. You see, it isn't just that the Israelites are going to get to the Promised Land, but God is doing it in such a way that everyone will have to look and say that it was simply Yahweh that did it. You know, there are those times when we stand facing a problem on one side that seems as insurmountable as the Red Sea, and behind us it looks like the Egyptian army is following us, and we don't know which way to turn and which way to go. But you see, this is a great passage of Scripture because it teaches us several things. First of all, it teaches us about the power of God. It reminds us, it's to be a great reminder, and Moses taught the people of Israel to sing the song that told them the story because it was a great reminder about the power of God. There is nothing that my God cannot do. I used to sing a song, "My God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do." We need to be reminded of that. And this passage is a reminder to the people of Israel, and it's a reminder to us that no matter what we face, our God is powerful. And there is nothing that our God cannot do. There is no disease that He cannot heal. There is no financial struggle that He cannot take you through. There is no opposition that you cannot face in the power of God. But it's also a reminder that while our God is powerful, He doesn't always work in our times and in the ways that we would understand. I don't think a person standing there in the Israelite nation that day thought that God was going to part the Red Sea and lead them through on dry ground. You see, while God can heal us from all disease, He may choose not to, because our miracle the miracle that He wants to work through us may not be healing, but it may be the message that we share with somebody else that brings them to salvation, to the miracle of a new life in Jesus Christ. God may not take us through the way that we expect Him to, but He will be there because our God is powerful enough to lead us through. As we look at this passage of Scripture, as Moses taught the people the song, it wasn't just because their God was powerful. It's one thing to know that God is powerful, but it's another thing to know that God is faithful. God is faithful, and part of the song, part of the teaching is that God is faithful. You see, God had promised Moses back on Mount Sinai when the bush was burning that he would know that God was with him when he got back to the mount to worship. And then as he goes before Pharaoh, Moses is told that Pharaoh will harden his heart, or God will harden Pharaoh's heart, and that God will do mighty signs to show Pharaoh and the Egyptians and the rest of the world that God is powerful and that God is fighting for them. And what does God do? He's faithful. He takes the people through the dry ground in the middle of the Red Sea with the walls of water on either side of them, and then He drowns the Egyptian army because of their hard hearts. What does that tell us? That tells us that God is faithful. God has done for the people of Israel what God had promised Moses He would do. God is faithful. If we remain faithful to Him, He is faithful to us. It also reminds us that God is to be worshipped. And so Moses pens this song. And it is a song of instruction, it is a song of remembrance, but it is a song of worship. The people get through the dry ground to the other side of the Red Sea, and God wipes out the Egyptian army, and they begin a worship service on the eastern bank of the Red Sea. You see, God had told the people of Israel, and He had told Pharaoh that they needed to go out of Egypt on a journey to worship Him. And immediately on the other side of the Red Sea, when they're out of Egypt, they worship God. You see, it's a great reminder as we see this that God is a God who is to be worshipped. It doesn't matter what the circumstances of our lives are. It doesn't matter if God has done what we expected Him to or what we needed Him to do, which aren't always the same things. He'll always do what we need Him to, but it's not always what we expect. But the message of the song, the message of the story is that our God is to be worshipped. You see, God says that He is bringing the people of Israel out not because they were more powerful than any other nation, not because they were better than any other nation, not because they were less sinful than any other nation, but because He was going to do it for His glory. Because He was faithful to the promise that He had made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because He is Yahweh, the great I Am. He is the one and only God of all the universe. And because of those things, our God deserves all glory and honor and praise and worship. There is no one else that deserves our worship. There was no one else that deserved the worship of the people of Israel at this point. But Yahweh, the great I Am. And so the people worshipped. Moses penned a song and began to sing it, and then Miriam and heard it, and she began to teach it to the women, and they began to sing the song of Moses. To sing the song of God and His great power. And the first words of that song say, I will sing to the Lord, for He is highly exalted. Both the horse and the driver He has hurled into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my defense. He has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise Him, my Father's God, and I will exalt Him. You see, because of what God did for the people of Israel, the only thing they could do was sing His praise. And the great message for us is that no matter where we find ourselves today, no matter what we see in front of us, no matter what we see behind us, no matter what God has done and what God is doing or what God will do, that the God we serve is the God we need to worship. The God whose praise we need to sing. The God whose glory we need to spread and whose fame we need to make known. Because we don't know what God is doing through our circumstances of life. But we know He's powerful, we know He's faithful, and therefore we know He must be worshipped. Do you know the salvation that's offered by this God? You see, while God brought the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt, He brought them out from under the hand of the taskmaster Pharaoh. God has given us a greater exodus through the blood of Jesus Christ. Greater taskmaster, the taskmaster of sin that has ruled over the lives of people since Adam and Eve ate of the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. On a cross just outside of Jerusalem, Jesus Christ died to free us from sin and to begin a greater exodus so that we can be free. And if we're free, we must worship the God who frees us. We're going to sing one more hymn this morning, and if you have never experienced that exodus, we would love to celebrate that with you this morning. If you simply need to ask what that exodus looks like and what it means, we'd love to begin a conversation with you about that. But if you are at the point this morning where you are ready for that, we would love to celebrate with you in the waters of baptism. So if you need to make a commitment or a decision this morning, won't you come as we stand together and sing Rescue.